This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, December 30th, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. Energy grids throughout the U.S. are notoriously complex, and when balancing the environmental impact against the cost of various forms of energy, many policymakers have made some profound discoveries about economic trade-offs, actual environmental impact, and externalities. Andre Beliveau of the John Locke Center in North Carolina makes the case for considering a broader range of environmentally friendly energy.
For states that want to be attractive to business, an absolutely key component of that is energy production, but the cost of energy. In some states more than others, it might be, you know, how environmentally friendly is that energy production, that sort of thing. What has North Carolina done, and why do you think it holds promise for other states?
Sure. So one of the things that our state legislature has done is mandated carbon reduction into statute. So what does that mean? It means while they didn't say what energy sources could be used, they did set forward guardrails, like the energy sources have to be at least cost to ratepayers. The energy fuel sources that are chosen cannot jeopardize the reliability of the grid. So while that helps, has ratepayers in mind, also helps making sure we don't have rolling blackouts like in other places, it also makes us attractive to companies who have their own environmental goals. So if a company is thinking like, okay, we have, you know, carbon reduction as part of our corporate plan, well, just by moving to North Carolina, they can achieve those goals. So they're moving into a state that already has a promising tax environment for them. It's business friendly already. Now by the legislation and the policies that are in place in North Carolina, it makes it even more attractive to businesses to come to our state.
How replicable is that in other states?
I think the language is agnostic enough that it can be replicated in other states. I mean, so effectively what the language is, the policy, is that it says we want you, the utilities commission or whatever state, however states determine, is that you must reduce CO2 emissions by X number. North Carolina chose 70% by 2030 and then carbon neutral by 2050. And you can do that however you want, but it has to be done at least cost to ratepayers, and it has to be done without jeopardizing the adequacy and reliability of the grid.
Yep. And what has been the result so far?
So the result so far is the Utilities Commission has decided to meet with through a stakeholder process to decide how they're going to do that. So the main energy company in North Carolina, Duke Energy, has provided four portfolios to the Utilities Commission, and now they're in the stakeholder process. They're hearing from expert witness testimony. Are these actually least costs? Is this actually most reliable? And what we're seeing right now is this is actually allowing the marketplace of ideas to unfold, right? People are coming forward and saying, well, actually, no, this plan is more in line with the law at least cost and reliability. My organization has put forward one of those plans. There are countless other organizations. And what we're seeing is kind of interesting, especially anyone who's interested in this energy sector. We're seeing, you know, the renewables organizations come through and become creative. We're seeing nuclear being brought into the fold in a very heavy way. I mean, it doesn't emit any carbon. It's extremely reliable. So we're seeing that come to the fold. Even natural gas. And it's been interesting to watch people who traditionally would have opposed something like natural gas talk about it in a way as it is actually a cleaner fuel that could be used as a bridge fuel maybe to something more nuclear. And we're starting there now. It's now opened up the conversation about it doesn't have to be all renewables all day long. We can achieve this through things like natural gas. We can achieve this through things like nuclear. But also what our policy allowed was for the commission every several years to examine advances in technology, right? So in mandated in statute, they're required to say, is there something better that makes us cheaper and more reliable? So if down the line, something like carbon capture becomes a reality, well, maybe we don't have to close all of these coal plants. Maybe we don't have to close the new natural gas plants because we now have carbon capture. That mixes into their standard for least cost reliability and maintaining the carbon goals. So it's innovative in a way. It's forward thinking to allow for advancements in technology. And as I alluded to before, it actually helps North Carolina's business environment because people can achieve their climate goals just by putting iron in the ground in North Carolina.
Yeah, and even just the process of getting to deciding upon better sources of energy, I think it probably makes the scales fall from people's eyes when it comes to sources like natural gas, like nuclear.
Absolutely.
When they actually have to critically examine whether those things are more or less environmentally friendly.
That's right. And also, I mean, I'm sure other states are similar to North Carolina. Our grid is designed to take dispatchable baseload energy sources. So what does that mean? Large baseload facilities like a nuclear facility or a natural gas facility or a coal plant, and dispatchable, which means it's readily available all the time. You can flip a switch and the facility starts moving, it's producing power. It's not a non-dispatchable, non-baseload source, something like solar or wind, where if the sun's not shining, the wind's not blowing, you don't have power. It requires additional infrastructure like battery storage. And even then, the amount you can hold in a battery storage facility is, again, accountable to these externalities. But also the quality of the energy that flows through the grid is important. The quality of the energy that flows through from some of these other sources is just not there quite yet. So owing to the fact that the grid requires dispatchable baseload sources, the policy in place of reliability in particular, but also least costs, sort of places, while it's agnostic, it does place those guardrails into particular energy sources. Because in order to adopt other things like renewables, it would require massive amounts of grid modifications, which incur a lot more costs.
What do you tell coal states?
I think there's hope for coal states. I mean, every grid is going to need dispatchable sources. If a state chooses to use coal, that's fine. I think things like carbon capture technology is going to change the game. What I think we really need to do, especially in environmental circles, is tell people to just let's calm down. Let's relax. This is not a race to 5 seconds from now. This is a long-term plan. I think people get very excited about when we start talking about things like climate change, and they feel like you have to act right now. Well, and I think that the reasonable thing to do is to be smart about this. I think all of us agree that we want to be as environmentally friendly as possible, and we want to conserve the environment, but we also don't want to experience a winter with no power. We also don't want our economies to crumble. So the slower we, as far as closing coal plants or moving into other technologies, let's wait, because something like carbon capture may come into the fold here. And even some of these coal facilities can be transformed into natural gas facilities, or on the same footprint, you can put in like a small module nuclear reactor, for example. People can keep their jobs. I think there's studies right now about coal operators can easily transition into being nuclear operators. So these are all things, if we just take our time and be reasonable about it, the coal states don't have to worry. It's just, I think it's getting the environmentalists to get on board with things like nuclear, but also slow your roll.
California and Texas famously have had recent episodes of either sky-high energy prices or blackouts or both. And why does the electricity grid, why does that in so many areas stop at the state line?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I mean, I think the problems there is you're seeing in those states where they are heavily reliable on renewable energy. Renewable energy is just, it is not reliable. You know, anything that is not a baseload dispatchable energy source is not reliable. It also incurs incredible costs because of grid modification. So to your point, it's not least cost, but they've also just thrown reliability out the window for a sort of virtue signal. We could say we're using X source, whether it's wind or solar, instead of being innovative. But I think we really need more states to buy into something like the North Carolina model, and also working really hard at changing the narrative, particularly, North Carolina has a Republican-controlled General Assembly, but it was still a General Assembly that passed a bill that mandated carbon reduction into statute. Well, why is that? Because the policy framework and guardrails around it were reasonable. It said we're going to do this in two ways, and it didn't throw out reliability for costs, and it didn't throw out costs for reliability. And I think that is really the framework. That's a two-pronged effort that I think is really significant. And the more states that do that, I think we will see a better marketplace unfold, and we won't be experiencing the rolling blackouts like in Texas or California, and we won't fall to the issues that we're seeing in Europe. We have a perfect, I think, example right now of what not to do with energy policy just by using what's happening in Europe as a case study. So if we don't do that and we learn from that and try to do something different, I think using North Carolina as a model, we'd have a better way forward within each state.
Andre Beliveau directs government affairs with the John Locke Foundation. It's that time of year when I ask you, yes, you, to show your support for this podcast and the broad mission of the Cato Institute with a gift. Visit cato.org/podcast sponsor to get started, and thank you.